new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Fight card this Saturday, and it's headlined by a pair of title bouts when UFC 247 invades the Toyota Center on pay-per-view. Headline, of course, by light heavyweight champion John Jones. Welcome in to the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports. My name is Brian Campbell, and with me to break down this card at length is my co-host. You know him as a UFC Hall of Famer, always sweet, never sour, I like to say. It's Sugar Rashad Evans.
What's going on, BC? Good to be here. Good to be with you. I forgot that you didn't say the hurricane survivor part.
Yeah, he is an earthquake survivor.
earthquake.
His Hall of Fame speech last July. Former UFC light heavyweight champion. You might be the most fittest man in South Florida at the moment, but that's another topic for another day, Rashad. We've got an interesting card to break down for this Saturday. Of course, John Jones and the Marquee against unbeaten challenger Dominic Reyes. We're also going to see the return of women's flyweight champion Valentina Shevchenko in her third title defense against Caitlin Chookagian. Wanted, though, to pick your brain a little bit about the biggest headlines in the sport of MMA before that. You ready for this? You want to go three rounds with BC? I'm ready to go three rounds with Rashad.
I'm ready.
Let's do it right here. Round one, we start off with this. Dana White, the UFC president, was on our own Jim Rome show talking about the future plans for 2020. He is targeting for International Fight Week in July a main event, a welterweight title bout, as Kamaru Usman would defend against BMF champion against upstart phenomenon Jorge Masvidal. Now, Rashad, if that plan plays out to perfection, that will not include Conor McGregor, and obviously McGregor-Masvidal is a fight so many fans and experts want. This would put McGregor more in line to fight the winner of Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tony Ferguson, for that lightweight title. Is this the right move business-wise for Dana White and UFC?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is mainly just for the fact that, you know, this fight has legs of its own to stand on. You know, with that whole Super Bowl confrontation between Usman and Masvidal, you know, that kind of sparked some interest in it, and it made people want to see that fight. But even before that, I felt as if, like, this was the next fight to make. I mean, you can put Conor into the mix, but at the end of the day, you know, you want to see guys who are legit 170-pounders who's been putting in the work get that shot, and Masvidal is that guy.
And look, Masvidal, what else would he have to do to earn a title shot after his Fighter of the Year campaign last year? I think the biggest question, if you're going to counter this, is to say, who else would Usman face? There really isn't anyone else right there next in line, maybe outside of a Leon Edwards, but he doesn't have the marketing side to demand that kind of shot. Do you have any fear, though, styles-wise, and I know you're close with Kamaru Usman, you know his wrestling ability, that this could be a trap fight for Jorge Masvidal when he is so popular and so ready to be burst onto the mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a tough fight for Usman. I mean, there's some things that Masvidal brings to this card, I mean, to this fight. You know, he's got really good grappling. He's got the ability to get up to his feet, and he's been dominated by wrestlers in fights before. So, you know, he's definitely have learned from that situation, and he knows what Kamaru's going to do. He knows what Kamaru's good at. So he definitely brings some problems to the table, but I think where he falls short is where he underestimates Kamaru with his stand-up. I think that's going to be something that surprises him. Also, you know, to his favor, you know, I think that his speed may be something that may give Kamaru some trouble as well too. So there's some interesting trade-offs in this matchup between the two of them.
And certainly a Masvidal victory would be a monster boost to his star power. And obviously, on the UFC side, you get a chance to make Conor McGregor against Khabib Nurmagomedov. If he wins, by the way, no disrespect to Tony Ferguson, you kind of got to go forward with that plan. It may be the only fight right now in the sport of MMA that could really challenge that pay-per-view record. Not only the UFC pay-per-view record, which was Conor Khabib won, but I'm talking about all the pay-per-view records. You know, the bloodlust between them. You know that Conor McGregor's brand is refurbished. But moving on to round two here, Rashad, you talked about Kamaru Usman striking. We saw that on full display at UFC 245 in December when he knocked out former interim title challenger Colby Covington in one heck of a five-round brawl. Covington was on ESPN on the Uriel Helwani MMA show. He basically put it like this, Rashad: I'm only coming back for a title shot, or I'm not coming back at all. Give me that immediate rematch with Usman. Or he used words like, this sport is fixed, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know Colby Covington, he'll let that mouth go. From your perspective, does he have any case for this to be able to say, look, hey, Jorge, you wait in line, I'm next, brother?
No, Colby, listen, he had a great fight. It was a great fight between the two of them. But here's the reality. At the end of the fight, he got finished. And when you get finished in a fight, if it went to the judges and it was a split decision, yeah, he has grounds to say, listen, let's get a split. Let's get a rematch. But he got finished. When you get finished, you have to at least get one fight back in there to say, you know what? I worked on my things, and now I'm ready to challenge once more the new and improved Colby Covington. But you just don't come after being finished and say, I'm new and improved, and I'm ready to fight the champ again. He's got to face the facts. He got finished in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is Colby certainly exercising the power of his own brand marketing-wise, but I think it leaves you going, hey, Colby, you've done great building yourself into the most hated man in UFC, but you're not Conor McGregor at the end of the day. There's only so far you can call your own shots. Interesting, though, Colby told ESPN, look, I want that rematch with Usman, or I want a celebrity boxing match with 50 Cent. He's a little upset at some of the tweets that good old Finney put out there. I know Finney survived a few gunshots. I don't know if he wants this kind of smoke.
Nah, you know, 50 definitely the one that's got to smoke, especially against Colby Covington. Listen, Colby should just take the fact that, you know, he's been getting, you know, he's got what he wanted. You know, people respect him now. His name is hot right now, even though he did lose that fight. You know, he has a bit of credibility. The only thing that can ruin it is just running his mouth.
You have to believe if Colby can stay busy, he would be one win away from getting right back into that title picture after he recovers from the broken jaw, of course. But round three, I know I'm going to preview with you Jones Reyes this weekend at UFC 247, but John Jones himself, maybe the greatest of all time, did have a chat with Uriel Helwani this week and said, look, if I get by Dom Reyes, it may be time to go to heavyweight. I want the Stipe Miocic rematch. I think it's a matchup that fits me perfectly in every category. Rashad, he said he would not even need a tune-up fight. All right, I want to ask you this. I'm not here to say anything bad about the idea of Jones Miocic. Would be big business, would be everything I want for John Jones's legacy to have a chance to be what it could be. But how much do you think him saying this is another jab at his great rival Daniel Cormier, who basically echoed Colby and said, you either give me Stipe for a third time or I'm retiring?
Yeah, listen, I agree with that matchup. I agree with that call out too, because honestly speaking, if John Jones bumped up, he is the most successful fighter in the light heavyweight class and, you know, a legend in the sport, and you're probably one of the best athletes to ever strap on the 4-ounce glove. So you got to put him in there right away with the title shot. It'll be an interesting fight, because here's the thing about it. Stipe does not get enough respect, and I can't say that enough. You know, I don't know what it is, but people think that Stipe is that guy, but he constantly proves that he is not the one to pick. So it'd be a good fight, but it'd be something interesting to see, say the least.
Yeah, I've been on record so many times saying John Jones versus any elite top five heavyweight. Heck, John Jones against Brock Lesnar. Anything you do with John Jones at heavyweight, it would be the biggest business he could make, maybe outside of a Cormier trilogy fight, just because of that intrigue to see what would happen if he matched his skills against more dangerous punchers. And obviously that would be a great way for John Jones, who's 32 and already the GOAT, to kind of add to his legacy in a way that maybe nobody could eventually touch him. Obviously, he's got to get through Dom Reyes this weekend at UFC 247. We're going to get into that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Let's be honest here, Rashad, all right? These views that are expressed coming out of my mouth are the express written consent of Brian Campbell. Maybe not Rashad Evans. But this UFC 247 card is about as top-heavy as it gets. I love me this Jones-Reyes fight. I'm always going to be excited when Valentina Shevchenko gets on board. But it's slim pickings after that to find a fight you care about, a storyline, something you need to see. When you, Rashad Evans, look at this undercard for Saturday night in Houston, any matchup jumping out to you that we should take a closer look at?
I like the Miles Johns and the Mario Bautista fight. You know, Miles Johns coming from the Contender Series. Big guy from the bantamweight weight class. Got a lot of power. Can wrestle real good. Can go for submission. Opportunistic in a submission position. He got some real power in his feet. And he's going against a guy in Bautista. And this guy's full throttle. You know, he's got a lot of volume in his striking. He's a wrestling base fighter. And he just goes at it full pace, in-your-face kind of fight. So this is going to be an in-your-face kind of fight. And the Contender Series guys have impressed me so much because they get on the stage and they're not shy about it. They have so much confidence as if they've been fighting the UFC for years. So I'm looking forward to see what this guy has, John Miles.
Yeah, it's getting to the words, Dana White, Contender Series. You're thinking about an aggressive, hungry fighter, the Macy Barbers, the Edmund Shabazians, on and on. Johnny Walker's had great success coming out of that show. Rashad, when I look at this undercard, maybe this fight I'm going to identify, you know, won't deliver the most entertainment, but it could be important. It comes in that women's flyweight division. We're going to see Shevchenko in the co-main event defend it, but Lauren Murphy going in there against Andrea KGB Lee, just from this standpoint, that field of potential contenders is so incredibly thin. I know Joanne Calderwood is also in this conversation, and she's fresh off a victory over Andrea Lee, but you really can't name a single contender, Caitlin Chookagian included, who stands out so much above the rest, where I always feel like any women's flyweight fighter is one strong win away from getting right deep into that title conversation. Even Roxanne Modafferi, the veteran, who got the big win over the upstart prospect Macy Barber last pay-per-view. You look at Lauren Murphy and Andrea Lee. I don't know, Rashad, if you get a big finish here, if you make some noise on that microphone, there ain't a lot of business for Valentina if she wins this Saturday.
Yeah, I know. And Lauren Murphy's been impressing me. She's been looking so good lately. Just her mindset, it seems to have changed since she got off the Ultimate Fighter show. And now she's competing with a different kind of passion, with a different kind of mindset, and just kind of like she belongs in there, you know. So I'm looking for some big things out of her.
All right, let's go through this main card that goes down on pay-per-view on Saturday, UFC 247 in Houston. I'll echo it again, not the deepest. We do have potential for some bangers. And when you start out there in that opener in the heavyweight division, Derek Lewis always, always brings entertainment with his all or nothing style and his even more bombastic ability on the microphone. He's going in there against a tough out in Alair Latifi. My boy Brandon Wise of CBS Sports has dubbed him Beefy Latifi. But Latifi making that debut this time around at heavyweight, he's fought just about everyone at light heavyweight. If he doesn't win, he typically gets knocked out. How do you like his chances in the higher division, considering he's already one of the shortest light heavyweights among the top contenders?
Well, like you said, the fact that he's a shorter guy, and he's been used to being the shorter guy for a longer time, but now I feel he's in a weight class that fits him more, and in his attributes that he didn't have at light heavyweight, being the faster guy, he gains as a heavyweight. So I kind of like him better as a heavyweight. The things that he needs to work on as a heavyweight is just kind of working more of his wrestling game. Latifi's a great wrestler, but kind of got out of it because he was into the striking with the light heavyweights. But now I think he's at the heavyweights, he can go back to his wrestling base and start to tire some of these guys out. Once he tires these guys out and put the pace on them that I would believe he should be able to put on them, being a lighter guy going up to heavyweight, I think he should be able to let his hands go at that point. This is a tough fight, a bigger, tougher fight for Derek Lewis, who showed in the past that he fades when a guy has a lot of energy, a guy who can put a lot of pressure on him. He does have the power, Derek Lewis does, and that's going to be the defining moment in the fight if Lira Latifi can take those shots. But for the most part, I got beef with Latifi.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle, and I like you taking that upset pick there, because I'm not here to necessarily compare Latifi to great heavyweight champions of old. We don't know yet how he's going to look on Saturday and from then on, but that whole concept of being smaller, quicker, with a better gas tank, and using wrestling, which we don't historically always see across the board as a strength for heavyweights. You look back, Randy Couture, undersized heavyweight who was a wrestler. Cain Velasquez, somewhat undersized wrestler. Daniel Cormier, somewhat. I mean, you get the drift of what I'm going
and
here.
You can't forget about the Denver. What's his name? I'm drawing a blank.
You ain't talking about Shane Carwin, are you?
No. He just won. He beat. Oh my gosh, my mind's drawing a blank. The heavyweight that just won. Oh.
I'm drawing a blank, too. We failed the audience here, Rashawn. No worries in the end. But, you know, Derek Lewis can be vulnerable at times. Here's one thing I always worry about, Derek. And he climbed that mountain in such an unexpected way to get that title shot against Daniel Cormier. He's 34 years old. Yeah, he ended a two-fight losing streak when he beat Blago Ivanov last November. But I almost felt like him losing in such a one-sided fashion to DC may have taken the air out of his motivation. This is a guy who openly admits, you know, I don't always train the hardest. And that was a fight in which he went all in on. He came up widely empty. I fear for him that he's just going to become an exciting paycheck guy. And I think when you develop that mindset, you can take some L's along the way, Rashad.
Absolutely. And that's a tough position to fight from. I mean, he enjoys to compete, but at the end of the day, you see when it's a dog fight out there, you know, Derek Lewis, sometimes he's game and sometimes he's not, but it all depends on if the guy did something in a fight to upset him. You can tell when Derek takes it personal, because then, you know, he fights a little bit harder, fights a little bit differently. But if that chord is not struck in the fight, then sometimes you can see Derek is like, all right, you got it. I'm done. I got paid.
We move on to the featherweight division. The always exciting Mirsad Bektik will be in there against upstart Dan Ige. Now, Ige's from Hawaii. He's 4-1 since making his UFC debut and has looked, you know, spectacular at times. Rashad, there were some people at certain points thinking Bektik was a title contender. We've seen some up and downs from him. Where do you think he is at right now in his arc?
I think he's figuring it out. You know, but Bektik is figuring it out, and he's been taking the long road to figuring out, but he's getting everything. He's getting his rhythm and everything down. I still believe in Bektik. I think he's a tremendous talent, but like I said, you know, he still needs to figure it out. But Danny Ige is a guy that I'm looking for to just kind of go in there and do what I've seen him do. I've trained with Ige many, many times in Las Vegas, and this guy has gotten so much better from the stand-up point of view, but I think the ground is where he's been growing the most. He did a camp with Habib, and that camp has taught him so much about his style, and he kind of formulated his style after, you know, being in that camp and after grinding with those guys. So this is a different Dan Ige than we got here.
I'm interested to see if he can really make that leap. You hear a lot of underground rumblings for a couple of years about Ige, that there could be something special there. We move on to the heavyweight division. Now, look, I don't have a background in MMA matchmaking. I'm just one of those critics, right, who sits in his basement where I am right now and criticizes people. But why is this card in the main card in this feature spot? It's Juan Adams at heavyweight against Justin Taffa. You may remember that name, Juan Adams. He's on a two-fight losing streak, one of those against Greg Hardy, the embattled former NFL All-Pro, who's making his own sort of rise as a heavyweight here. I don't know what to look for in this one, Rashad. What am I missing?
I don't know either, man. I really don't know. I know. I don't know either, man. I'm kind of hoping that they bring something. I'm kind of hoping that they make it exciting. You know, I mean, Juan Adams maybe can land something. Taff maybe can land something as well too. This is Taffa. Taffa's not bad though. Taffa's one of those guys who seems like he has some promise, seems like he has some power in his hands. It seems like he can do something. So hopefully they both seem like they can do something together. I don't know. This is a sleeper for me.
Yeah, I mean, Juan Adams has the size and the power. When he's been victorious, it's been by knockout either in LFA or since he joined the UFC through the Dana White Contender Series. He's a fun guy when it comes to interviews and running his mouth, and he's flamboyant in the cage. And look, obviously, you take some losses early on. You learn from those, especially from a heavyweight who has the time to mature. I mean, we see so many heavyweight contenders in their late 30s. Juan Adams, just 27. He's gonna have a great showcase opportunity at the very least here on Saturday night in Houston. But we move on to the two fights that matter the most here. Both title opportunities in that co-main event. You have Valentina Shevchenko, the women's flyweight queen, and arguably, I mean, how can you call her? Arguably the best in the world when she's lost twice to Amanda Nunes, the greatest of all time. I'm here to tell you, arguably the best in the world. She got a little bit robbed in that rematch. Maybe we'll see a third one day. But we know Valentina Shevchenko is as good as it gets today. This is her third title defense. She's been absolutely dominant since winning the vacant belt against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She gets Caitlin Chookagian. And Valentina is a massive favorite in this one, Rashad. What does Chookagian bring to the table that could give her some hope?
Chookagian brings in a pace, and she brings in that forward pressure that a lot of girls don't have in a weight class, and she brings in a lot of punches, but she has this ability to wrestle. Her boyfriend, or husband, I should say, it was a great wrestler, Kyle Seminara, and he's taught her a lot of different techniques, and you see her kind of implement it more, and just the pressure alone, you know, you bring that wrestling pressure, it's going to bring you in a good position, and she also moves her feet really well, too. That's going to be harder for Shevchenko to counter, because Shevchenko likes to counter, but when somebody's putting that pressure on you, it's hard to get that pause to go with a counter when they're just kind of firing the whole time. And I think that's what Chookagian's going to have to do. She's going to have to just fire the whole time, and then through firing the whole time, it'll cause Shevchenko to suppress her shots, her punching shots, and then that would allow Caitlin to implement her game. I think a big part of Caitlin's game is getting Shevchenko to the ground and working on some of that ground that she's been working with her ground coach, John Dennehar, out of Renzo Gracie's jiu-jitsu gym. So I think those are the keys that can help out Chookagian.
Yeah, she certainly is working with the right people out there on Long Island. A lot of big-time names out there she can train with, and going with John Dennehar is a huge help to her. She'll have that 4-inch height advantage. I like what you're saying about using activity to sort of disarm Shevchenko. Easier said than done, obviously. But Chookagian, I'll give her this. She's got such an awkward pace. I think it's going to come down to her chin in the end, because Valentina Shevchenko, especially at 125 pounds, is not to be messed with when it comes to accurate, heavy, hard counter shots. Her two title defenses kind of showed us both sides of the table. Jessica Ai, somebody who has that split decision victory over Chookagian a couple years back, really rushed and came at Shevchenko and got finished with a destructive head kick knockout. Then we saw Liz Carmouche, the veteran in Shevchenko's last bout, kind of just stand back and hold the ball. There were some boos, some criticism of Shevchenko allowing that to go five rounds, but Rashad, she dominated every second of that fight. Do you see Caitlin having to really bite down on that mouthpiece to take this fight rounds and really have a shot here?
Yeah, she's going to have to bite down that mouthpiece, and she's going to have to make it an ugly, grueling, dirty fight. That's what she's going to have to do, because that's going to be her strength. You know, Shevchenko is extremely well and extremely good at when she has the range and the distance, and she doesn't need much in order to counter and strike. But you got to take that away from her. One way you can take that away from her is just by being on her. being in her face, make it that grueling fight where it's not allowing her to have the space and opportunity to find those counter shots. And also, when you get her into that place, you know, it may frustrate her. Being a champion is really hard to frustrate a champion, but no matter who you are, when the moves are not working, you get frustrated. And that's what Chu Kagan has to do. She has to find a way to just jam up Shevchenko's technique a little bit and then find a way to make hers land.
Look, Shevchenko is great. I mean, she's so friggin' great, Rashad. That's not the kind of analysis you put on a full screen or anything, but she's friggin' amazing. And I give her so much credit because at bantamweight, she was smaller, she was compact and strong, but she was largely just a counter striker. While that's still her strength, I think you've seen since she's moved down to flyweight at a more natural weight for her, her strength on the ground has come out in spades. I know you just sort of identified a potential avenue or key to victory for Chu Kagan is using her own size and taking this fight to the ground. Is that a trap too? I mean, is every road a dead end potentially for Caitlin here?
It may potentially be, just because of the simple fact that Shevchenko has gotten so good at every single facet of the sport. You know, you look at someone in the way that she trains, you know, she has a private training, she doesn't have a team, and they pretty much travel on the road like the traveling circus. And they you know, she works on every single technique and everything is focused on her. And she's gotten so much better just because of the simple fact that she doesn't have, you know, anyone else to worry about, but everything and all the attention is focused on her. And, you know, her ground is on point. Her takedowns are on point. She throws people like crazy, and the power on the feet with a counter striking is just ridiculous. You know, there's so many ways that Shevchenko can win, and you know, she's getting better and better every single time she comes out in the octagon. She's bringing out a new wrinkle. Her last fight against Liz Carmouche was not what the fans wanted because they were, you know, expecting a big knockout, but I'm guaranteeing the next time she comes out on Saturday, we're going to see something that she learned from the fight that she's implementing in this one.
And she is just, you know, you talk mentality, Valentina Shevchenko with the tattoo of a firearm on her hip. She brings it in there. She is mentally, physically tough. A woman of the world, raised in Kyrgyzstan, spent a lot of her life in South America, trains in Thailand constantly. You identified that. She also has her older sister, Antonina, with a strong kickboxing background, currently a UFC flyweight as well. Not a bad training partner from that point of view. Rashad, let's go on the record. The people want to know, do you like an upset on Saturday, or is this Shevchenko by a mile?
It's Shevchenko. I got Shevchenko in this one. I just think that, you know, her what she brings to the table is going to be too much. You know, I think that Caitlin has grown so much. I think Caitlin is going to be a different fighter when we see her in a cage on Saturday, but I don't think that is going to be enough. I think that she's going to be under a lot of pressure from Shevchenko, just because Shevchenko is amazing in her and everything that she does. Yeah.
Hey, the odds makers, they're not often way off. Okay, they may be onto something here. We move on, of course, to the headliner, John Jones, defending that 205-pound title, the one formerly worn, by the way, by the great Rashad Evans. You can see, oh, my shoulder here, a little artwork with Rashad carrying the belt right there. But he'll be defending against unbeaten Dom Reyes. And we look at John Jones, 32 years old. Made that return in December 2018, a little bit more than a year ago, from the multiple battles with USADA, fought three times in basically a six-month span, and gave you a couple different looks in finishing Alexander Gustafsson, and then, of course, going the distance against Anthony Smith in a very close split decision in July with Thiago Santos. I want to start right here, though, Rashad. You're a former friend, foe, training partner, title opponent of the great John Jones. I already said off the top of the show, he may be the GOAT, but how ridiculous is this that it was 9 years ago he first won the light heavyweight title from Shogun Hua, and he has basically been the man for almost a full decade, save, of course, for the times that suspensions took him away and opened the door for Daniel Cormier. How ridiculous is it that he's only 32, that he's already the GOAT, and that no one has this kind of longevity at the very, very top.
It's unreal. It's unreal. I mean, when you're competing in the UFC and, you know, you've had the ups and downs outside the octagon of John Jones, to be able to stay focused and still harness it, to be able to go out there and give the performances that he has inside the octagon is unbelievable. It's such a mental drain, and he finds a way to do it every single time. I'm impressed. You know, when you look 9 years ago and you've seen how dominant he was 9 years ago, you're just like, all right, he's good now, but he's going to fade. But he's never faded. You know, he's only gotten stronger throughout the years. And now he's looking still as unstoppable as he was back then.
Yeah, if there's any change to the new John Jones at 32, I think you're seeing a smarter, more efficient pace and style to what he's doing, which is natural as age starts to mount on you. But if there's any concern coming in for Jones about this fight, it's certainly people that watched both the Anthony Smith fight, in which he dominated but could not get a finish, and specifically that Thiago Santos fight. Rashad, when you look back at that performance from John Jones, was he playing with his food too much? Was he too comfortable in the idea of, I'll take this guy the distance and win, when Thiago almost backdoored a sneaky win there? Or are you seeing elements of slippage or even a, I don't know, a misgiving about putting his foot on the gas like we used to see? What do you sort of make of the criticisms John Jones has faced even through three consecutive victories?
Well, here's the thing about it. John Jones is a person, and just like the rest of us, the more you do something, the more you have an experience to draw from. And having experience to draw from, sometimes there's good experiences and sometimes there's bad experiences in the cage. And you can't shake the bad experiences. So he has those. He has the times where he's been rocked or he's made it through this scary situation in a fight. We don't know how, you know, those blows affected him in the cage, but he does. So whenever you go through that in the cage, it's almost like a PTSD a little bit. It sticks with you and it makes it so that you're not, you know, doing the things that he used to. Before, he would go and he would do all these kind of crazy acrobatic things and stuff like that because he was young and he didn't have the fear of anything yet because nothing has really bad happened to him. But, you know, he's been in a lot of fights and he's been in there with some tough guys and he's been caught with some big shots. So that kind of changed a little bit, and it kind of changes, you know, what you do and how you perfect, you know, how, what technique you do. Now, with all that said, that does not mean that John Jones is afraid to do a technique, but now it just means he thinks about it a little bit more before he does it.
Well, look, this is going to be a, you know, a little hipster theory making from me at identifying a potential warning sign. But when you talk about what you just did, having gone through the danger spots aggressively as a younger fighter, but now as a veteran, knowing the price, knowing the score, knowing too much, maybe, is there any fear? What could happen to John here is what almost happened to George St. Pierre. What do I mean by that? George became a decision machine going five rounds in so many of those welterweight title defenses. And you almost saw a GSP, a guy who used to finish people early, become more of a prevent defense guy, become more of a, I'm going to try to dominate every aspect of this fight, but I'm going to be more than happy and content to just outlast you for 25 minutes and survive in advance. The reason why I bring up this fear is I've never heard John Jones so vocal like he is now about his legacy, about the idea of what he can do for the rest of this decade in his 30s, moving up to heavyweight, and sort of, to steal his own words, put his goatship, if you will, put the idea of him being not one of the goats, but the goat, in such a far off distance that no one would be able to touch him. Is there any fear, Rashad, that John could be focusing too much on trying not to lose? And maybe that's what we saw against a dangerous Maheta just 6 months ago.
Hey, BC, I'm glad you heard it too, because that's what I heard. That's exactly what I heard when I watched the aerial interview. I kind of got a feeling just by watching the aerial interview that Dominic Reyes is his Benny Blanco from the Bronx to his Carlito Brigante, if you know what I mean. The Benny Blanco from the Bronx, a young up and coming kid who believed in himself. You know, every sense of the word of you know, Dominic believes in himself like John Jones believed in himself when he fought Shogun. You know, he has that fear, that fearlessness to him. And I think John Jones recognizes that. He recognized that fearlessness. And that's a tough place to be, because John Jones is at a different place where, you know, where he doesn't see the challenges of a young guy like that because he's been through it so many times. He's been through, you know, this guy's going to do this. This guy says he's going to do this. He says, I can't do that anymore. Whatever the case. It gets hard to see the challenges of the challengers when you've been challenged so much. And I think that's what John Jones may be going through. He may not be able to see that he's staring, in fact, at himself 9 years ago.
That's interesting. Now, when you look at sort of the odds and the chances for Dom Reyes to do the, I don't want to say the impossible, because look, what's impossible is John Jones being on the win streak that he's on and that no one's been able to catch him or surprise him or backdoor a questionable decision. But when I look at the two times in John Jones's title reign in which, I don't want to say he's been most compromised, but the most competitive, I look at the 2013 war with Alexander Gustafsson, which I believe we can explain away from a guy who was partying too much, overlooked his opponent, didn't take that whole situation seriously. He's grown from that on and on. The second time is that fight with Thiago Santos just a few months back. Here's the deal on this, Rashad. You could almost look at that as a distraction. If he's focusing too much on just doing enough to win, that's a different kind of distraction in my eyes. Now, look, what Thiago Santos did in that fight to make John Jones fight that way was test his chin early, land bombs in awkward times, in awkward space, overcome two leg injuries in which he's still recovering from today, and just go for it and explode. But if there's a connective tissue across the board that Dom Reyes might have, he's not that dissimilar in size, style, volume, and danger in my eyes to what Gustafsson and Maheda brought to the table. So when I look at this fight, I certainly say Dom Reyes is a live dog here, unbeaten, 6'4", may not know any better not to go out there and empty the tank and walk into danger. But I think who ends up winning this fight comes more down to what's going inside John Jones's head. Because if you told me this is the same John Jones that ran through that litany of light heavyweight heroes a decade ago, including yourself, Rashad Evans, in that five-round decision, I'm predicting him to win by a knockout. But if Reyes can demand enough respect and keep this fight going, I don't know. Live dog, Rashad. Live dog alert. I'm telling you right now.
I agree 100%. You know, part of me, honestly speaking, was thinking that Reyes was going to go with the upset. And I'm going to tell you why. Listening to Reyes speak and even watching his last performances and just watching what he does, you know, this kid can wrestle. This kid has power, like power, real power. And he's a big, big guy. And that's something that John Jones really hasn't faced. He hasn't faced like someone with all the attributes put together like himself, like Dom Reyes has. And that's what's going to be interesting. I think that Dom Reyes, you know, he's taken John Jones off the pedestal. John Jones is no longer, you know, oh gosh, John Jones, the greatest light heavyweight of all time. He's taking him down. He's like, yeah, the guy's a human. He's very beatable. You know, that means that when he looks across the octagon, he's not going to be like, wow, that's John Jones, and get all like starry-eyed by him. He's going to go in there. He's going to make it ugly. He's going to land a takedown. And if he does not get caught watching, because what happens most of the time, when you're going against a guy like John Jones, you learn all his moves. You know all his moves before, because Dom Reyes was a fan at one point of John Jones. So he knows all his moves. And at that point, you can get to the point where you're just watching John. Okay, that's that move. But that's when John sneaks in something you didn't study for, because it's something that he just made up, you know, and that's where he catches people. But Dom Reyes, if he goes in there and he doesn't get caught watching him, he goes in there, he fights his fight, he makes it ugly, he lands some takedowns, you know, just make it a different kind of pace fight, I think he stands a good chance of walking away as new.
Wow. I mean, I love his mentality. He talked about at the UFC media lunch last week when he went face to face with John Jones back in December at the UFC, at the press conference in Las Vegas. First time he'd ever been in the same building as John. And he said, look, you know, I didn't feel anything. Like you mentioned, I didn't feel starry eyed. I didn't feel nervous. My heart rate didn't go up. That's certainly the baseline foundation for someone to attempt to pull this kind of upset. But you identified your keys to victory there on that full screen for Dom Reyes. One of them, making it ugly, is certainly key. But you brought up takedowns. And I want to sort of counter you this and say, John Jones's takedown defensive percentage is through the roof. I believe what? One man. Was it DC the only man, or was it Gustafsson? One of the
Gustafsson.
Two are the only Gustafson, the only man able to take him down. What have you seen up to this point from Reyes, wrestling-wise or athleticism-wise, that can give you confidence that he can do that against John?
Well, I know he has a wrestling background, and I know that wrestling background, Joe Stevenson, he's going to try to bring that into factor. I think that when you go against somebody like Jones, you have to bring out all the tools in the toolbox. You're not going to just sit there and just land that left hand and catch. I mean, you may catch him with it, but for the most part, you have to put something around it. And I think John Jones got taken down by Gustafson because, for one, he didn't expect it. But it also showed that he can be taken down, and he can be taken down quite simply, but it all has to do with how well you sell everything else. And if Dominic Reyes sells everything else the right way, then he can take him down just as easy as Alexander Gustafson did.
I want to get to Jones's keys in a second, but to close on Reyes, his last couple of bouts, he's shown us a little bit of everything. Some good, maybe some questionable. Obviously, his destruction of former middleweight king Chris Weidman was spectacular and showed you at 6'4" as a southpaw with the uppercuts, his devastating ability to stop people. But I want to bring up that fight from March 2019 against Volkan Ozdemir. He gets the split decision win, but a lot of people thought he didn't deserve that, and he got taken down almost at will against a guy who's really not considered a wrestler. Is that sort of a aberration, a wake-up call? What do you pick out when you look back at the tape of that fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look back at that fight, I think it goes back to the same reason why Jones got taken down by Alexander Gustafson. Sometimes you have in your mind a way that somebody's going to fight, and then they do something different. And it may take a little bit to get over it, and I think that's what that's what happened to Dominic Reyes in that fight. You know, Ozdemir just took him down a few times and he just really wasn't expecting it. Do I think that his wrestling is on the level of John Jones? No, but I think that he can wrestle. He was a wrestler in high school, and I think if he goes back to that, he's a big guy, he's a talented guy, he's an athletic guy. I think he can land a takedown. Because think about this. If Alexander Gustafson landed a takedown on John Jones, and he has no wrestling background, why can't Dominic Reyes? And he has a wrestling background. You know what I'm saying?
Now, Reyes will have the same issue that most Jones opponents have. He'll have a 7.5-inch reach disadvantage. Rashad, you went the distance with John Jones. You heard him. You had some moments in there. How difficult is it? How much of a built-in incredible advantage, along with all the other things that John Jones that makes him great, is just that ability to be longer than you?
It's an amazing, tremendous advantage for him, because what that 7-inch reach does is it always constantly put him in range to hit you, and you'll be outside of range where you think you're outside of range, and you'll be trying to take a few breaths or just kind of figuring out what you're going to do next, and you're already in range to strike even before you get there. The part that got me with his reach was just not realizing how long those elbows were coming behind that reach. And that's something that was really hard for me to gauge, because I can see where his hands are coming out, but I'm like, okay, that's good. But then he had an elbow that came out just as long as his arms did, and it surprised me. But that's what that 7-inch reach does, that he's able to do that. And then if you couple in the fact that he uses his legs and the teeter-totter movement going back and forth so well in conjunction with that reach, it almost makes it impossible to hit him, or just, you know, it makes it easier for him to do whatever he wants to on you. So it's a huge advantage for him.
Now, for John, I mentioned the caution. I thought he could have and should have taken down and obviously injured Thiago Santos late in that fight to probably secure it better. Obviously, I'm not the guy who's put myself in the line of danger, and credit to Maheda for always having something heavy to give John Jones pause. But in light of that, when you look at the keys for victory for Jones on Saturday against the frame, the size of somebody as Dom Reyes, how does John Jones win this fight?
Well, what John Jones needs to do is what John Jones always does. You know, John Jones has controlled the tempo of the fight. As long as John Jones is controlling the tempo of the fight, he has the ability to pick his shots. When John Jones is picking his shots, he will put you in his trick bag and he'll put you to sleep. Russell from the cage. John Jones on the cage is absolutely dynamic. I haven't seen too many guys use the cage as well as John Jones because, you know, he has so many different options that he does on a cage, and he almost makes it feel like no matter what you do in that position, you're doing something wrong. And also utilizing the lower oblique kick that he does so well, that lower kick is going to pause the motion of Dominic Reyes coming in, because Dominic Reyes is going to come in fast. He's going to come in hard. A few oblique kicks is going to mess up the timing of him coming in, and it may even injure his leg. So he's not going to be able to have a lot of power to plant when he wants to land those powerful shots.
Shot, it is prediction time. I'm going to jump in and go first. Here's the deal. Dom Reyes does have what it takes to pull this upset on Saturday. Will he do it is the key question here. At the end of the day, John Jones is still John Jones. He's still in the midst of his physical prime. And I think if we're going to look at Dom Reyes maybe learning from that tight fight with Volkan Ozdemir, I think you can say the same about what John learned about leaving Thiago Santos out there, leaving him on the hook and not getting rid of him when he had the opportunity. I think Reyes' aggression may end up playing against him. But what I think ultimately will separate these two in the end are intangibles. There's a reason why John Jones has been here. There's a reason why on maybe his worst night at the office, he was still able to outlast an elite championship level performance from Alexander Gustafsson in their first fight. He's a champion at the end of the day, a warrior. He has a chin, and you can revisit the Santos fight. You can revisit the Machida fight, the Rashad Evans fight. He has a chin that has never been bested. He finds ways to win. I think he does it once again. I think the unbeaten side of Reyes, the upstart side of him, I think Jones is emboldened by this. He loves the challenge. He could have picked Corey Anderson just the same. He wanted a guy who was unbeaten, a guy who believes in himself. I think ultimately the chutzpah we're talking about here for Dom Reyes may play against him. You identified the leg kicks. That's a great way to weaken a guy, prepare him for a takedown, and get that choke. I think John Jones does it in the third round. What is your prediction for Saturday night?
I think John Jones is going to have his hands full with Dominic Reyes. I think that Dominic Reyes is coming in his fight, and he's, you know, coming in his fight with a different kind of, I guess, feel than I can say John's other opponents has. I feel as if like he's taken almost a disrespect, like he's knocked John off the pedestal. Like he's like, I'm here. This is something that is meant to be. You know, he feels like it's a higher calling for him to get this belt. And when you feel like that, you fight like that. And I think that is something that John recognizes too. And I kind of notice when they're doing their interviews and when they're speaking about each other, John is very perturbed by this guy. He's more bothered than I'm used to seeing him with people. And it's really weird because I haven't really seen much from Dominic that draws out that feeling, but John kind of said it when he was like, you know, Dom he was the jock. He was the guy who had everything I didn't. You know, he kind of tapped into some latent emotional feelings John had. So I think that's where John is fighting from. But nevertheless, this guy, Dominic Reyes, he's a challenger. He has power in his left hand. He can wrestle. He's strong. But at the same time, he is going against a John Jones who is, in my opinion, the best fighter to ever put on the 4-ounce gloves. You know, he's proficient in his striking. His groundwork is amazing. His improvisation inside the cage is amazing. So with all of that said, I think that John is going to struggle for a little bit until he finds that thing that's going to separate him, and then he's going to be able to take over the fight. But I think for the first few rounds, it's going to be a closer fight than most people expect. But I think that John Jones is going to get a decision in the end.
There it is. Dom Reyes did say Jones has fought strikers. He's fought wrestlers. He's never fought an athlete like me. We'll see if the former college football player can do the impossible, right? Become the first man to legitimately defeat John Jones on Saturday at UFC 247. Let's take a recap at our picks for this card, Rashad. I don't know if people should bet the house on what I'm saying here, but you seem to know what you're doing. Jones Reyes at the top. All Shevchenko. We'll see what plays out on the rest of that card. I don't know, Rashad. Anytime John Jones is there, I'm ready. I'm front row. I'm eating the popcorn. I'm ready to go. He is a special individual all time as well. And that will do it for your State of Combat preview for UFC 247. For the Hall of Famer, Rashad Evans, this is Brian Campbell. If you're just watching us for the first time, be sure to subscribe to our weekly podcast, giving you the best in boxing and MMA every week, wherever podcasts can be found. The State of Combat is out. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Jones Reyes, we out.
Hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.